Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 906. The destabilization of Hillary Clinton. This is being broadcast on, recorded, on May 11th of the year 2016. In For the Record shows 896 through 899, we in part reviewed Farah Mansour's historic research about what I call the Deep October Surprise. Generally, the term October Surprise refers to a conspiratorial, misconception. It has some accuracy, but it doesn't go far enough. That misconception is that there was a deal colluded or a deal made between the Reagan and Bush campaign in the 1980 presidential campaign with the Khomeini forces in Iran to withhold the U.S. hostages that had been taken from the embassy in November of 1979 until after Jimmy Carter's humiliation and consequent election defeat were assured. What we reviewed in For the Record 896, 7, 8, and 9 was that there was indeed massive collusion between, let's just say, Camp Bush and the Khomeini forces in Iran, but it went much farther and was much deeper, and the events were of a much more prolonged nature than the conventional October surprise theory maintains. In fact, the Khomeini forces themselves were installed in Iran as part of a covert operation to A, replace the Shah of Iran with an anti-communist and anti-Soviet regime in Iran that would continue Iran's role as sort of an anti-communist or anti-Soviet flank element on the Soviet Union's southern flank. The covert operation was also intended to destabilize Jimmy Carter and to ensure his election defeat. The covert operation was successful in both accounts, although now the regime installed as a result of that gambit has become a thorn in America's side. As I have pointed out, in the admittedly complex multi-layered analysis that I have been featuring for many years on the show, when one digs deep enough, one comes across the underground Reichshand in many of the things that this country, meaning the U.S., has done. That could be thought of as a sinister and murderous iron hand in a velvet glove. And in fact, the agenda of the underground Reich does not intersect very completely with that of the U.S. And I think that many of the forces, the Islamic fundamentalists, both Sunni and Shia, which have been tabbed as anti-communist proxy warriors and as armed heralds of corporatist economics, those very same Islamic fundamentalist warriors that have, as a matter of record, been used by the U.S. national security establishment and others, will ultimately complete their role as combatants against the U.S., the very country that spawned them to a certain extent. Just witness any number of combats, including, for example, ISIS fighting against elements of the U.S. military, one of the core elements of ISIS combat formations are the Chechens, who have been actively supported by elements of Western intel and have fought against U.S. special operations forces in Afghanistan, among other places. And yet, as was the case in World War II, where American industry and finance, to a large extent, actively supported the Axis nations, whom they saw, again, as anti-communist proxy warriors and as heralds of corporatist economics around the world. Those very same Axis forces were supported by American industry and finance, while American fighting men and women were ranged in a fierce and lethal combat with those very same forces. Although the venue appears to have changed, I think the analogy is a good one. In some of my programs about the about the Earth Island Boogie, I went into some of the geopolitics. One of the things that I noted at the tail end of the interviews with Farah Mansour, and those were conducted in January of 1993, right after Bill Clinton was inaugurated as president of the U.S., was that the same counterterrorist networks that were in place and were able to successfully destabilize Jimmy Carter were once again still in place and could destabilize Bill Clinton as well. With Bill Clinton having committed the consummate indiscretion of having had relations with Monica Lewinsky, he basically, if not committing political suicide, certainly handed his enemies the dagger with which to slice him. However, we were treated in the Clinton years of 1992 to 2000 to a steady barrage of propaganda about the Clinton scandals and everything that they supposedly did. Let's just say that there wasn't a heck of a lot that came out of it other than Monica Lewinsky and her foibles. By the way, Monica Lewinsky was ultimately represented by Plato Cacheras, who specializes in intelligence-connected matters. Plato Cacheras had previously represents none other than Edward Snowden, having succeeded in that regard Bruce Fein, the chief counsel for Ron Paul's 2012 presidential bid. When the Arab Spring came down in the spring of 2000, late winter and early spring of 2011, everybody was celebrating this as a wonderful thing. I, on the other hand, said, no, this is an operation. It is designed to bring the Muslim Brotherhood to power throughout the Arab and Muslim world. Again, their role as anti-communist combatants or anti-socialist combatants or anti-democracy combatants and as armed and empowered heralds of corporatist economics was front and center. Even for the record, 733 through 739, my original series about the Arab Spring, I said that among the goals of this operation were the destabilization of Barack Obama's foreign policy and the ultimate tarring of Barack Obama with one aspect or another of the terrorism brush. And I said something very similar would be done to Hillary Clinton, who was already at that point a clear frontrunner for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2011. I want to note that the bloodbath in Syria and also the bloodbath in Libya, among other things, are both outgrowths of the Arab Spring, far from bringing a political Eden to the Arab and Muslim world. That covert operation, begun, by the way, under the George W. Bush administration, late in that administration, has resulted in political catastrophes in a number of places. And once again, Barack Obama is under attack for not having enough guts to get in there and do what needed to be done. And some of the fallout from the Arab Spring is now engulfing Hillary Clinton. We are now being told that her private email server was receiving or was the repository of classified information. I am not myself a big fan of Hillary Clinton. There are many things about her as a political animal I do not particularly care for. However, I have not seen a political figure demonized in the way she is being demonized. Some bloggers have termed Hillary derangement syndrome, really since her husband was in office. It is quite remarkable to watch her being demonized. Barack Obama has received similar treatment. When one does a couple things, first of all, separates out the wheat from the chaff with regard to the Hillary scandals, unquote, there just isn't a whole lot there. Beyond that, something that is very interesting to me is to see the extent to which the right-wing media echo chamber serves as something of a reverberation room for the center and so-called progressive sectors of the media as well. One of the things that we're going to touch on in the program today is a book called Clinton Cash by a guy named Peter Schweitzer, S-C-H-W-E-I-Z-E-R. Predictably, Fox News has contracted to release excerpts of that. The New York Times and the Washington Post have also contracted for information from Schweitzer's book. He is not only an avowed anti-Clinton operative, so to speak. He's a former political advisor to Sarah Palin and someone who moves in the financially anointed political circles that are blessed by, you guessed it, the Koch brothers. Recently, although I am not at all sure that Bernie Sanders understood the origins of what it was that he was saying, but he was basically referencing information, perhaps through a more reputable source such as the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Internet, about Hillary Clinton laundering money. Again, this is the Clinton cash hypothesis. And when something that like that takes place, and again, I'm not accusing Bernie Sanders of being in bed with the Koch brothers, yet the net effect, the cognitive and rhetorical effect of the right-wing media echo chamber and amen chorus in this country as such is such that it affects the entire political spectrum and makes it relatively easy for someone like Bernie Sanders to go ahead and basically wind up being a water carrier or spear carrier for Koch brothers' finance media interests. And again, I'm assuming that when Bernie repeated that, he was not aware that he was basically echoing Koch brothers' media propaganda. But that was the essence of what he was doing when he accused Hillary Clinton of laundering money.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
What we're going to do in this program is to show not only some of the gap between reality and perception with regard to the Hillary emails scandal. It is really a non-scandal, but also who is behind the perceptions. We're going to review the fact that the current director of the FBI, James Comey, was a supporter of Mitt Romney in 2012. It remains to be seen what he winds up doing with the FBI investigation of the Clinton emails. We're going to be taking a look at how not only Fox News but NBC have distorted the Clinton email, quote, scandal, unquote. We're going to take a look at the New York Times distortions of Hillary Clinton's record as well. And we're going to take a look at the MSNBC team of Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, and how they simply edited an appearance by David Ignatius, a Washington Post columnist. They simply edited out part of his contribution to make it appear that he said something very different. In the Media Matters blog of August 12th of 2015, there was a very well-researched and thoughtful post by Liz, L-I-S, Power, P-O-W-E-R, and Katie Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. The article is titled Myths and Facts on Hillary Clinton's Email and Reports of, quote, Top Secret, unquote, Materials. And I'm going to give a quick overview and then go into some more detail. Again, this is by Liz, L-I-S, Power, and Katie Sullivan. There are thumbnail bios of both of these ladies on the Media Matters blog, and they did a pretty good job. And in doing so, they were obviously swimming against the rhetorical and political tide. The post begins, media are exploiting news that two emails Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton turned over to the State Department from her time as Secretary of State may be retroactively classified as top secret, unquote, to push myths about Clinton's handling of government information and scandalize her email use. And then four major points we're going to go into. Fact. None of the emails sent to Clinton were labeled as either classified, unquote, or top secret, unquote. And again, I'm going to go into details. Fact. Emails originated in State Department system and questions about retroactive classification would have occurred regardless of Clinton's server use. Fact. Experts have debunked any comparison between Clinton's email use and David Petraeus's crimes. Fact. IG referral to Justice Department was not criminal, and the FBI isn't targeting Clinton herself. And an introduction about how the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community spoke of or referenced the two emails. Intelligence Community Inspector General says two emails from Clinton's server should be marked top secret, unquote. IC Inspector General says two emails from Clinton's server contain top secret information. The Inspector General for the Intelligence Community, or ICIG, I. Charles McCullough, N-C, capital C-U-L-L-O-U-G-H, reportedly informed leaders of key congressional oversight committees that two classified emails previously discovered on Clinton's server contained top secret information. As McClatchy reported, the IG for the Intelligence Community notified senior members of Congress that two of four classified emails discovered on the server Clinton maintained at her New York home contained material deemed to be in one of the highest security classifications, more sensitive than previously known. The notice came as the State Department Inspector General's office acknowledged that it is reviewing the use of personal communications hardware and software by Clinton's former top aides after requests from Congress. State Department, it remains unclear whether material in two emails should be retroactively classified. NBC noted that the State Department is still working with the intelligence community to determine whether the information in the two emails should, in fact, be labeled as classified. Clinton aides have maintained that nothing on her server was classified at the time she saw it, suggesting that classified messages were given the label after the fact. John Kirby, a spokesman for the State Department, said that that was the case with two emails, adding that it remained unclear whether, in fact, this material is actually classified, unquote. Department employees circulated these emails on unclassified systems in the 2009 and 2011, and ultimately some were forwarded to Secretary Clinton, Kirby said Tuesday. They were not marked as classified. Note that the investigation is not targeting Hillary Clinton. She did not send those emails. And by the way, I would note in passing here that the State Department's server is not secure either. So in terms of blocking the foreign intelligence eyes from looking at State Department communications, the regular State Department server isn't secure either. Indeed, I think there is something rather farcical about our entire society at this point. If one goes back to 2002, on April 18th of 2002, on page A4 of the Wall Street Journal, not a small, obscure publication, and certainly not part of the liberal news media, unquote, there was a full-page article about Talat Osman, a key aide to both Presidents Bush, a foreign policy consultant, a personal friend, an individual who gave the Muslim benediction at George W. Bush's inauguration, and the operating manager of Grover Norquist's Islamic Free Market Institute. He interceded on behalf of the targets of the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002, the so-called SAR network. Those were individuals and institutions who were raided by the Justice Department and the Department of Treasury for having worked to finance terrorism. And again, Talat Osman, a director of Harkin Energy, a man who gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican, at George W. Bush's inauguration, a man who was a personal friend and foreign policy advisor of both George's Bush and the operating manager of Grover Norquist's Islamic Free Market Institute, interceded on behalf of individuals and institutions who were raided for helping to finance Al-Qaeda and Hamas. And yet, that vanished from American public consciousness to the extent that it ever entered at all. So, against the background of things like that and the assassination of JFK, the whole Clinton emails non-scandal is frankly farcical. Now let's go into some of the myth versus fact. Myth: Clinton received emails marked as top secret. This comes from Fox News and from NBC. Fox anchor Brett Baier, B-A-I-E-R. Top secret was marked on the emails sent to Clinton. During the August 11th edition of Special Report, host Brett Baier claimed that top secret was marked on the emails that Clinton received during her time as Secretary of State. Mike Emanuel: the breaking news of the hour is that the Intelligence Inspector General has told top lawmakers on Capitol Hill that two of those four classified emails from Hillary Clinton's personal server were top secret in nature, and they're still studying the other two to figure out what the relevant classification should be. Brett Baier: top secret marked on the emails. FBI inquiry obviously already going to classified information improperly stored, they said, on her private server. And also, Mike, a thumb drive. Anyway, this is Fox News, you can imagine. But not just Fox News. NBC's Andrea Mitchell: Intelligence Community Inspector General, quote, contradicted Clinton's repeated claim that nothing on those private emails was classified, unquote. On the August 12th edition of NBC's Today, Andrea Mitchell argued that the ICIG's statement contradicted Clinton's, quote, repeated past denials. And then there's more in this regard. Fact: none of the emails sent to Clinton were labeled as classified or top secret, parenthetically, when they were sent. Government officials: none of the emails were marked as classified when they were sent. The Washington Post reported that when the ICIG first, quote, found information that should have been designated as classified in four emails from Clinton's server, two of which he now says contain top secret, unquote, information, government officials acknowledged that the emails were not marked as classified when they were sent. Skipping down. The Inspector General, I. Charles McCullough III, said in a separate statement that he had found information that should have been designated as classified in four emails out of a limited sample of 40 that his agency reviewed. And again, note that none of the information was marked as classified when it was sent to Hillary Clinton. What basically, as the Post notes here, is there is something of a turf struggle on between the Department of State and members of the intelligence community, and of course, I think we can safely interject the political right wing and media outlets, for example, like Fox News, of course, owned by the News Corp, and also note that NBC is owned by General Electric, which, among other things, makes the inertial guidance systems for guided missiles that would certainly benefit from a new Cold War. Bringing the political right to power will help to ensure that. General Electric has been fiercely critical of Barack Obama and the Democrats for the last X number of years. Also, I would note, although the State Department classifications may be different, classifying something top secret isn't all that high a security clearance, at least not in military terms. The lowest security classification is secret, and then there's top secret that goes on up. When you're getting to things like crypto or cosmic or ultra, then you're talking about some very, very high security clearances indeed. The State Department may be different, but top secret isn't all that high a security clearance, at least not in the military keys, so to speak. It may be different for the Department of State. Again, in military, when you start getting up to crypto, cosmic, ultra, those are really high security clearances. It's not to say that the secret or top secret designations are to be sneezed at. If you are not clear to be looking at information like that, and if you have a document in your possession that's marked top secret or secret, and you are not cleared for that, you're committing a crime. So would the person who gave you that information. But still, as a general consideration, top secret isn't, at least in military classification, it's not a particularly high security clearance.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
More, however, about the difference between the right-wing echo chamber, Fox News in particular, and the realities of the Hillary Clinton email, quote, scandal, unquote. Myth. Emails weren't marked as classified because Clinton used a private server instead of State Department email. Fox and Friends' Steve Doocy. Emails were never classified because Clinton used a private server rather than the State Department's email system. Throughout the August 12th edition of Fox and Friends, co-host Steve Doocy, D-O-O-C-Y, repeatedly blamed the lack of classification on Clinton's use of a private server instead of the, quote, State Department email system, unquote, arguing the emails, quote, were never classified because she never submitted it, unquote. And there then follows a particular, predictable back and forth between Doocy and Andrew Napolitano, who, by the way, was a guest at Students for Liberty, which honored, among others, good old Eddie Snowden. The entire Snowden phenomenon comes from the far right. That, I think, could serve as something of a reference point for the destabilization of Hillary Clinton. When one looks at the barrage of information, or really propaganda, about Raphael Snowden, it all comes from the far right, and yet many of the same young and understandably, even lovably, idealistic young supporters of Bernie Sanders, among others, were taken in by Raphael Snowden. They view Eddie the Friendly Spook as a hero. That is how they were supposed to see him. And yet the realities are very different. The same is true of the demonization of Hillary Clinton. Now, fact. Myth, again, was emails were marked as classified because Clinton used a private server instead of State Department email. That from Fox and Friends. Fact. Emails originated in the State Department system, and questions about retroactive classification would have occurred regardless of Clinton's server use. Again, fact. Emails originated in the State Department system, and questions about retroactive classification would have occurred regardless of Clinton's server use. Emails originated with State Department employees and were forwarded to Clinton. The State Department's statement on the retroactive top secret designation made clear that the emails at issue originated with State Department employees, not Clinton herself. The following is attributable to spokesperson John Kirby. The State Department takes seriously its obligations to protect sensitive information, holding its employees to a high standard of compliance with regulations and procedures. And then it goes on to talk about the two emails. The intelligence community has recommended that portions of two of the four emails identified by the intelligence community's inspector general should be upgraded to the top secret level. Department employees circulated these emails on unclassified systems in 2009 and 2011, and ultimately some were forwarded to Secretary Clinton. They were not marked as classified. These emails had not been released to the public. Unmentioned here is who those employees were, what possible motives they may have had. May have been completely innocent. One wonders if perhaps, given the holdover of Bush State Department personnel such as Victoria Nuland in Barack Obama's State Department, one wonders who might have done that and what their motivation may have been. And I want to stress I don't have an answer to that. Clinton campaign. Emails originated from unclassified.gov email system. A fact sheet released by the presidential campaign for the former Secretary of State explains that the emails at issue originated on, quote, the unclassified.gov email system. Would this issue not have arisen if she used a state.gov email address? Even if Clinton's emails had been on the government email address and government device, these questions would be raised prior to public release. And Vox News, that's not Fox, Vox with a V. Whether or not emails should have been marked classified as part of bureaucratic turf war. And skipping down. This has caused a bureaucratic turf war between the department and the intelligence community, which believes at least one email that's already been released contains classified information, and that hundreds of others in the full set may also have material that's not ready for public consumption. For a couple of months, the inspectors general of the State Department and the combined intelligence community agencies have been baffling Patrick Kennedy, the lead State Department official, over who has access to the documents and authority to release or withhold them. Now, according to the Times and other publications, the IG team is asking the Justice Department to get involved in reviewing whether or not State has mishandled the emails. Myth. Hillary Clinton's email use is comparable to David Petraeus's crimes. Again, Fox and Friends with Steve Ducey. Ducey, Clinton's email use is, quote, the same thing that David Petraeus pleaded guilty to, unquote. On the August 12th edition of Fox News' Fox and Friends, Lucy hyped the debunked claim that Clinton's email use was similar to General David Petraeus' illegal mishandling of confidential information. And skipping down again, Fox judicial analyst implies Clinton's email use is worse than Petraeus' crimes. Appearing on the August 12th edition of Fox and Friends, senior judicial analyst Andrew Napolitano claimed, quote, it's a grave situation, unquote, for Hillary Clinton, arguing that General Petraeus only had the lowest level materials in a desk drawer, while Clinton, quote, had top secret materials in the server in her barn, unquote. Again, that's Fox News. Now, fact. Experts have debunked the comparison. Petraeus knowingly mishandled classified documents, whereas Clinton had authorization to use private email, and there is no evidence she knowingly emailed classified information. Petraeus pled guilty to violating 18th U.S. Code statute from 1924, unlawfully and knowingly moving classified materials, quote, with intent to retain such documents at unauthorized locations, unquote. Petraeus pled guilty to one count of violating Title 18, U.S. Code Section 1924. By the way, now Petraeus is a top consultant to one of the tech firms. I believe it is Apple, maybe Microsoft, one of the others. He is doing very, very nicely for himself. Now, due to the limitations of time, I'm going to attenuate the myth versus fact on the Hillary emails non-scandal. This entire worthy post from Media Matters by Katie Sullivan and Liz Power is in the description for the record 906 and will be available presently. Skipping down. New York Times, there has never been any legal prohibition against using personal email accounts. Despite having previously scandalized Clinton's use of private emails as alarming, unquote, the Times later clarified that, quote, there has never been any legal prohibition, unquote, against the practice, and that in members of President Obama's cabinet used a wide variety of strategies, unquote, to handle their emails. State Department, Clinton preserved and provided emails in line with 2009 regulation and how we handled records at the time. And this from a State Department deputy spokesperson, Marie Harf, explaining about the particulars in this focal point of the non-scandal. By the way, note the New York Times, because their behavior with regard to Hillary Clinton is something we're going to be coming to presently. I would note that one of the largest capital participants in the New York Times now is one of the richest men in the world, a Mexican national named Carlos Slim. He actually is of Lebanese extraction, was originally Carlos Salim. He has previously been in business dealings with the milieu of Jeb Bush, among others, and he is very, very well connected within the New York Times, owning a nice chunk of the Gray Lady. Skipping down again from the AP of July 26th of 2015, Director of Project on Government Secrecy. There's no comparison between the Clinton email issue and the Petraeus case. And again, this is gone into at considerable length. And then more. Myth. Clinton is the subject of a federal criminal investigation. Again, back to the old reliable here, Fox's Chris Spierwald. Clinton might be, quote, the subject of a federal criminal investigation, unquote. On the August 12th edition of Fox News' American Newsroom, digital editor Chris Spierwald claimed that Clinton might become, quote, the first major party nominee that is the subject of a federal criminal investigation. Fact. Inspector General referral to Justice Department was not criminal, and the FBI is not targeting Clinton herself. Reuters, Inspector General referral is not criminal. Reuters reported on July 24th that there was, quote, no criminal referral over the Clinton emails. And skipping down to another element from the AP of July 24th of 2015, AP, U.S. officials said that request of DOJ doesn't suggest wrongdoing by Clinton herself. Washington Post of August 11th of 2015, officials say Clinton is not a target, unquote, of FBI probe. But now notice that once Fox News says that she is, and once the internet, for example, will have stories saying a Clinton official, a former Clinton aide testifies in email investigation and all of these leaks by various people, it gives the impression, I wonder how many people are aware of the fact that the referral was not criminal and that Hillary herself is not the target of the investigation. Very few, I'll wager. And again, I want to note the behavior of America's newspaper of record, the New York Times, which also, by the way, is the CIA's number one propaganda asset. Good editorial in that regard, a good op-ed piece from The Atlantic magazine of July 28th of 2015, an article by Norman Ornstein, O-R-N as in Nancy, S-T-E-I-N. The New York Times botched story on Hillary Clinton. I have read the New York Times since I was a teenager as a newspaper to be trusted, the paper of record, the definitive account. But the huge embarrassment over the story claiming a criminal investigation of Hillary Clinton for her emails, leading the webpage, prominent on the front page before being corrected in the usual cringe-worthy fashion of journalists who stonewall any alleged errors and then downplay the real ones, is a direct challenge to the New York Times' fundamental credibility. And the paper's response since the initial huge error was uncovered has not been adequate or acceptable. This is not some minor mistake. Stories once published can take on a life of their own. If they reinforce existing views or stereotypes, they fit perfectly into Mark Twain's observation, "A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes." Or perhaps Twain never said it, in which case the ubiquity of that attribution serves to validate the point. And a distorted and inaccurate story about a prominent political figure running for president is especially damaging and unconscionable. I give kudos to the paper for having a public editor. Margaret Sullivan's long analysis of the multiple miscues was itself honest and straightforward, but even it raised its own questions, for me at least, especially surrounding the sourcing. Here is what top New York Times editor Matt Prudy said about the story's sources. They were, quote, multiple, reliable, and highly placed, unquote, and included some, quote, in law enforcement, unquote. Now, what does that mean? First, it means that some of the sources were not in law enforcement. If they were from Congress, and perhaps from Trey Gowdy's Special Committee on Benghazi, it would not be the first time that committee has been a likely source for a front-page Times story on Clinton. Quote, "We got it wrong because our very good sources got it wrong," unquote, Purvey said. "Excuse me, how are these very good sources," unquote, "if they mislead reporters about fundamental facts?" Were the congressional sources no doubt very good, unquote, because they are eagerly accessible to the reporters, careless in reading the referral documents, or deliberately misleading those reporters? We know that a very good reporter formerly with the Times, Kurt Eichenwald, read the memos from the inspectors general about the Clinton emails and quite readily came to the conclusion that this had nothing to do with a criminal referral, but instead reflected a fairly common concern regarding the recent release of particular documents under Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, long after Clinton left the State Department. This last sentence again. We know that a very good former reporter with the Times, Kurt Eichenwald, read the memos from the inspectors general about the Clinton emails and quite readily came to the conclusion that this had nothing to do with a criminal referral, but instead reflected a fairly common concern regarding the recent release of particular documents under Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, long after Clinton left the State Department. Dean Baguet, B-A-Q-U-E-T, executive editor of the Times, does not fault his reporters. Quote, "You had the government confirming that it was a criminal referral," unquote, he said. That raised another question. What is, quote, "the government," unquote? And is any employee of the Justice Department considered the, quote, "government," unquote? Was it an official spokesperson, a career employee, a policy-level person such as an assistant attorney general or a deputy assistant attorney general? One definitively, without an axe to grind, did the DOJ official tell the reporters it was a criminal referral involving Clinton or a more general criminal referral? And if this was a mistake made by an official spokesperson, why not identify the official who screwed up big time? When very good sources get a very big story very wrong and reporters, without seeing the documents, accept their characterization of the facts and put it on the front page, they have a professional obligation to tell readers more about who those sources were and about why they got it wrong. And as Eichenwald notes, the subject of whether the documents were a criminal referral and whether they involved Hillary Clinton directly were not the only major errors in the story by any means. For example, the Times story inaccurately says that the private Clinton email account was not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. A combination of errors on a huge front page story, and there is no fault on the part of the reporters? The story, of course, also has a larger context. Michael Schmidt's March story, the first on the private Clinton email server, was itself, quote, "not without fault," unquote, the Times public editor concluded. And the Times, going back to the multiple front page stories on Whitewater in the 1990s, claiming massive malfeasance that was seriously exaggerated, has raised many eyebrows over its decades-long treatment of the Clintons in news pages and columns. Parenthetically, never forget that George H.W. Bush, the man who was, for whom I should say, CIA headquarters is named, was the man defeated for re-election by Bill Clinton in 1992, and the New York Times is the CIA's number one propaganda asset. Never lose sight of that. Now, continuing with the Norman Ornstein column or article from The Atlantic of July 28th of 2015. One might argue that this should make the paper and its editors especially sensitive to avoiding overreach and inaccuracies about stories about the Clintons. I won't make that claim. Rather, the paper of record needs to be deeply sensitive at all times to inaccurate reporting and needs to respond with more than the usual buried corrections. The Times editorial page rightly holds public figures accountable for malfeasance and misfeasance. The same standards should apply to the Times itself. This story demands more than the promise to do better the next time and more than a shrug, as Matt Purdy and Dean Baguet gave, with Purdy blaming the sources and Baguet saying of his reporters, quote, "I am not sure what they could have done differently on that," unquote. I am. Holding a story until you are sure you have the facts right, as other reporters did with, it seems, government officials, unquote, shopping the story around, or waiting until you can actually read the document instead of relying on your good sources, so to speak, providing misleading and slanted details, is what they could have done differently. If reporters are hot to publish their scoops, it's up to editors in Washington and New York to put the brakes on. And that is especially true if reporters have previously made mistakes and overreached on stories. Someone should be held accountable here with suspension or other action that fits the gravity of the offense. I want and need the old New York Times, the leader of responsible journalism, the paper of record, back. I would add, actually, he's got it. Just read the Warren Report, my friend, and that was published by the New York Times. And the Warren Report makes the reporting on the Hillary Clinton non-scandal. Again, this whole thing is basically a media firestorm. The FBI investigation is pro forma. Whenever there is mishandling of classified information, there is a jurisdictional consideration. And how many people, though, know what I just read? Hillary Clinton is not the focal point of a congressional, of a criminal investigation. It remains to be seen, however, if James Comey, a Mitt Romney supporter in 2012, is able to spin things in a manner desired by the far right.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
More about the New York Times. From the Politico blog, this by Dylan Byers, B-Y-E-R-S, from April 20th, 2015. New York Times, Washington Post, and Fox News strike deals for anti-Clinton research. The New York Times, Washington Post, and Fox News have made exclusive agreements with a conservative author for early access to his opposition research on Hillary Clinton, a move that has confounded members of the Clinton campaign and some reporters, the On Media blog has confirmed. Clinton Cash, the untold story of how and why foreign governments and businesses helped make Bill and Hillary rich, will debut on May 5th, but the Times, the Post, and Fox have already made arrangements with author Peter Schweizer, S-C-H-W-E-I-Z as in zebra, E-R, to pursue some of the material included in his book, which seeks to draw connections between Clinton Foundation donations and speaking fees and Hillary Clinton's actions as Secretary of State. Schweizer is the president of the Government Accountability Institute, a conservative research group, and previously served as an advisor to Republican vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin. Publisher HarperCollins is owned by the News Corporation, but the Times and Post decision to partner with a partisan researcher has raised a few eyebrows. Sometimes reporters view the agreement as unusual, sources there said. Still others defended the agreement, noting that it was no different from using a campaign's opposition research to inform one's reporting, so long as that research is fact-checked and vetted. By the way, something the New York Times did not do with the reportage on the Hillary Clinton emails. Again, one of the top stockholders in the New York Times is Carlos Slim, the Mexican billionaire, named Carlos Salim, part of the very important, though little recognized, Lebanese diaspora. He, in the past, has networked with the business milieu of Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush's father, George H.W. Bush, is the man for whom CIA headquarters is named, as I mentioned, and the man defeated by Bill Clinton in 1992. And the New York Times is the CIA's number one propaganda asset. More about Peter Schweizer from the Hullabaloo blog by Digby. Look who was the featured speaker at the Koch Summit. This from May 1st of 2015. Peter Schweizer, author of Clinton Cash, whom they humorously call a researcher. Skipping down. Schweizer spoke at a political strategy summit for the Koch brothers last summer, urging donors to relentlessly pursue the left and rallying them ahead of a big fundraising pitch. His own organization, the Government Accountability Institute, receives funding from Koch-funded groups. Basically, it was the recycled disinformation from the Clinton Cash book here. Again, now accessed by the New York Times and Washington Post, relatively respectable institutions, that was recycled yet again by Bernie Sanders, probably not realizing that he was basically recycling some naked propaganda courtesy of associates of the Koch brothers' media mill. However, I think that serves to indicate just how effectively our society is managed by the right-wing media echo chamber in combination with the right-wing itself. I think the so-called progressive sector feeds right into this. Certainly, I think Hillary Clinton should be held to account for making speeches to Wall Street banks. I think it was foolish of her not to release her emails, or the transcript of the speeches, I should say. However, I would note that one of the driving forces behind Bernie Sanders' campaign, although we're hearing all about the small donors and, you know, the understandable and up to a point commendable young folks who are hopping onto the campaign bandwagon, the hopes vain, I suspect, of ensuring that they have a future at all, let alone a decent future. Sanders has received a lot of his momentum from MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org is capitalized largely by George Soros, who is one of the most cynical of the major investors. His currency speculations with regard to the British pound, the Russian ruble, and his participation in the Southeast Asian currency collapse of the late 1990s caused an awful lot of human destruction, and I don't think that that is any better, and maybe a whole lot worse, than Hillary Clinton addressing a bunch of Wall Street banks. I mean, hell, if a major one of those banks offered me six figures to come talk to them, I'd come talk to them, and I'd tell them what they want to hear to. Hey, you guys are great. Keep it up. I just couldn't turn down a paycheck like that, frankly. And that from someone that spent 36-plus years working for free and sticking my neck out in so doing. The point being that the right-wing media chamber really is very effective at setting the tone, and the so-called progressive sector often just piles right in on that. Bernie Sanders, for example, voted in favor of the bombing campaign in Kosovo in the late 1990s. I don't think that is any worse than Hillary Clinton voting to give George W. Bush authorization. I don't think it's any better, I should say, than Hillary Clinton voting to give George Bush authorization to move into Iraq if the intelligence called for it. Hillary Clinton actually advised against an invasion, but that has gotten lost. In the description for the record, 906 is a very interesting article by Craig Harrington and Timothy Johnston, again from Media Matters. ABC's Morning Joe edits out David Ignatius's debunking of Clinton email scandal. Now, again, on this, Joe Scarborough from MSNBC, and also Mika Brzezinski, the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, are interviewing David Ignatius, a Washington Post columnist, and he basically said that Ignatius responded by explaining that experts he spoke with dismissed as far-fetched claims that committed a criminal expense. And it goes on in that vein. However, when the program aired, it was David Ignatius's commentary was edited in such a way as to eliminate that and to use his edited comments as apposition to the anti-Clinton arguments being advanced by Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. By the way, the owner of Comcast, which is the parent company, the main stockholder in Comcast, is a big backer of George W. Bush, and that should be noted. Again, the people who own these media voices are not objective at all. And when you have a George W. Bush backer presiding over Comcast, the parent of MSNBC, well, the results are predictable. Once again, reviewing from For the Record, from a recent For the Record show, actually from 899, from the Hill of March 9th of 2016, Comey's FBI Makes Waves by Corey Bennett and Julian Hatem, H-A-T-T-E-M. The aggressive posture of the FBI under Director James Comey is becoming a political problem for the White House, skipping down. Then there's the biggest issue of all, the FBI's investigation into the private email server used by Hillary Clinton. And it says here, in these cases and more, Comey, a Republican who donated in 2012 to Mitt Romney, has proved he is not attached to the strings of the White House. But might he be attached to Mitt Romney or to the GOP? That remains to be seen. This concludes, by the way, that whole article is in the description for the Record 906. This concludes For the Record 906, the destabilization of Hillary Clinton, being recorded on May 11th of 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.